When you sense a calling within your career, it's important to find a pathway through which you can live out that calling. In other words, you need to find a job. But the job search is so often excruciating. It can be a long process consisting of tons of rejection before finally identifying the right opportunity and positioning yourself well to interview and then receive a job offer for a position that will give you a good chance of using your gifts in ways that make the world better. In this episode, I talk with Nick Dale, whose story I tell in Chapter 6 of Redeeming Work. Among other things, we'll explore how to conduct a job search and maybe how not to on this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. Welcome to the Purposeful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U, an online career assessment system that uses predictive science to help you find joy, meaning, and purpose in your career. For more information and to join, go to pathwayu.com. That's pathway, then the letter u.com. Today on the Purposeful Work Podcast, we offer our second interview in a series of episodes that focus on the intersection of faith and work, drawing themes from my new book, Redeeming Work, A Guide to Discovering God's Calling for Your Career. Our guest today is Nick Dale. Nick began his professional career in human resources, leading training and development for a small manufacturing company in Loveland, Colorado. 3.5 years later, Nick took his passion for HR and transitioned to working at Ascentus, a human resources software company based near Minneapolis. Nick is a solution analyst and helps human resource professionals solve their complex problems with technology. While his discernment process brought him plenty of challenges, Nick is working today at the intersection of his gifts and passions. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian.
Before we get started here, Nick, I was going to ask if you could just give us a little background. Tell us about yourself and the kind of work that you're doing right now.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm originally from Minnesota, if you can't tell in my accent, but yeah, I graduated in 2016 from Gustavus down in St. Peter, Minnesota. And my partner and I, Caitlin, she was going to start grad school out at CSU. And we decided, all right, let's do this thing and move out there. So after graduation, that was the big task that I had to conquer, was finding a job in a place that I didn't have a network. And so moved out to Fort Collins and started that journey. But I ended up finding my way after a couple of slips, trips, and falls, and ended up working in human resources.
That's awesome. And I tell a part of your story, the job search part in particular, in Chapter 6 of Redeeming Work. And so you moved out from Minnesota to Colorado to be near your girlfriend, Caitlin Reed, who's one of my PhD students at Colorado State University. And you came here without having a job, right? I mean, you moved here and then embarked on this process of having to identify an open position. So do you remember what your initial strategy looked like?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do. Yeah, it was probably the biggest wake-up call. But, you know, at the time, I didn't really know what the best strategy was. And being in the world of technology, I think that was what I started out with and what I knew. Sure. Hopping on those job boards, and I was sending out as many applications as I could. So, you know, if I could get to double digits in one day, one sitting, that was a big accomplishment. I was like just throwing the net out as wide as I could. You know, some of the jobs that I was applying to, I kind of laugh now because I would just cling on to, you know, a little piece of the position. And I was like, well, I'm going to apply for this, and just went into it. So started out, yeah, just applying for anything and everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of picture you sitting in Starbucks or whatever with your laptop, just cranking out these applications and, you know, redoing your resume a little bit and cover letter to tailor it to the job ad, which you're supposed to do. But you're posting to these job boards and you said maybe 10 a day. I imagine it felt like a big accomplishment when you're able to crank out that many in an afternoon.
Yeah, it's a lot of work doing it. You know, it's somewhat easy to submit it in the end. But yeah, you know, it takes a little bit of time. But just the searching process, it was time consuming. So yeah, at the end of the day, it was pretty tiring, you know, using a lot of energy just to get an application out there, get a resume in front of, you know, who knows what, maybe to just sit idle in some computer system. So yeah, I spent a lot of time in Starbucks or whatever coffee shop was out there and would just send out as many as I could.
Well, one of the things that we know about the way job searches work is a lot of positions are available on internet job boards, but a lot of open jobs never actually are publicly posted. Yet most people are kind of default to the applying to the positions posted on a job board. So what that creates is this situation where the largest proportion of job seekers are competing against each other for the smallest proportion of jobs, right? So tell us, how did that strategy work? How many callbacks were you getting from that strategy of just applying to a job board online?
Oh, gosh. I mean, if I had to say, I gave you a percentage, maybe let's say probably applied to maybe like 75 jobs. And I think I got two callbacks, and one of those somehow turned into an interview, and that interview went nowhere. So, you know, all that effort, I think it was pretty painful. It was a wake-up call, and you know, I just kind of would wake up every day and think, oh man, am I about to do that process again and just keep doing this? It was frustrating.
Well, I imagine it's got to be just so discouraging. That volume of effort, and then it's kind of crickets on the other, on the receiving end.
Yeah, I think, and especially with some of those, you know, the positions that I felt really passionate about, you know, that I would come across, and I would spend a lot of time just tailoring that cover letter and just pouring my heart into it, trying to show that company, you know, who I am and why I want to work in this position or at this company. And then to just not even hear back whether they want to move forward or not. That was pretty painful.
Pretty crushing. When we talked about this before, you talked about how there was this kind of progressive approach where you started out being really passive like this, just kind of applying online and waiting for them to come to you, and how eventually you started to slowly get a little bit more proactive in the process, maybe by following up after sending an application. Can you talk about that progression?
Yeah, I think that was, you know, some of that I credit to Caitlin for sure. It was vulnerable. It was vulnerable getting out and following up with these people. It was easy to, you know, hide behind a computer screen, and that rejection for some reason felt a little bit easier if I just never heard anything, and it was still pretty painful. But yeah, I would say, my first baby step would be just reaching out to that hiring manager or doing some research or giving a call and saying, hey, I just want to follow up on this application. And, you know, if I could end up talking to that hiring manager, just being able to, you know, express who I am and so that they could hear it in my voice of, hey, you know, this person sounds very genuine about, you know, this cover letter that they submitted, or, oh, they picked up on this little piece about our culture or about the position that, you know, that must have been important. So that was kind of my first baby step into actually getting in front of people and utilizing that proactive approach.
Did you notice any change in the success rates of moving at least to the next step of getting a nibble, an interview request maybe?
Yeah, for sure. So that's where I started to see more significant results. Yeah, you know, from those baby steps, didn't pan out into a job, but was at least able to connect. And then, yeah, they turned into interviews and was actually starting to see some traction. So that was something that, you know, started to fuel like, hey, you know, this connecting with real people is actually paying dividends in the end. So kind of pushed me forward into that.
Right. And so then I know eventually that you kind of turned that proactivity up another notch and began reaching out to folks in jobs that you were interested in, mainly in HR, whether they were hiring or not, right? Whether their company had a job opening or not, you kind of started to just be really aggressive in networking that way. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think kind of where it started was, you know, and I even remember the first time that I met you, and I always knew that someone is going to ask me, hey, what do you want to do? You know, I hear you're looking for a job. And just my response, it would always seem to catch me by surprise. And I would be like, wow, you know, and I would just start rambling and talking about you know, yeah, I'm kind of interested in this and I think I'm good at this. So it just, it wasn't very straightforward. And so I think that that was kind of the piece that I wanted to focus on. So, you know, after starting to understand, you know, what it was or to solidify what it was that I wanted to do, I was like, well, I'm just going to start reaching out to the people in positions that I find interesting. Just being somewhat introverted, I had to start with people who were close to me, you know, whether it was an aunt or an uncle or a family friend, just reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I'm interested in what you do. Can I buy a cup of coffee? Can I talk to you about, you know, what your day-to-day looks like in your position? And starting there. So that's kind of where I went and then built up that confidence in conducting those informational interviews and then starting to work with those people in the positions, like my dream position, like, hey, this is actually something that I've started to understand that I really want to do. I'm going to start reaching out to these somewhat strangers that I'm very loosely connected with and, you know, ask them about their job, what they love about it, what, you know, what skills do they bring to the table. And in doing that, I kind of started to think about myself and what strengths I had and how I could apply them to that position or my dream job and if I would be a good fit for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So these informational interviews, you're gathering information. It sounds like part of what you're saying is it just helped you reflect a bit on what type of role would be optimal given how you understood your gifts. But ultimately, it led to more than that, right? Because one of these led to the job that you ended up taking.
Yeah. And so that was kind of the type of position that I was really networking hard for, you know, conducting all these informational interviews was for human resources. I love working with people and kind of seeing their strengths, which is so funny that, you know, I had a hard time seeing my own at a time. I loved, you know, helping people develop and grow into their position. So that's why I kind of was so interested in human resources. And one of these informational interviews, I, you know, was loosely connected with someone at CSU actually. And she kind of told me about what she does in terms of human resources and kind of what the field looks like. It was helpful. It was nice to know. You know, we went our separate ways, hung up the phone. But the next day, she called me back and said, hey, I actually just spoke with someone who's looking for someone exactly with your exact background. And it was so funny because I was like, wow, never in a million years did I think that conversation would turn into anything. And yeah, that conversation turned into an interview and that interview ended up turning into a job offer. And that's where I was for the next 3.5 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because, you know, that job offer is not something that you found posted to a job board. You know, it was to somebody who you had one of these informational interviews with, was thinking about you the next day, and then took the initiative of calling you back and saying, hey, you know, we were just talking about something. I had you in mind, and here's an opportunity that might be a great fit for you. And as it turns out, it was.
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of funny because my supervisor at the time, who was looking to fill this position, was kind of doing that reverse networking to find people and say, hey, these are the types of people I'm looking for. You know, do you know anyone? And so, yeah, it's just kind of funny how those things work out.
That's amazing. And that would not have happened had you continued to sort of hide behind your laptop, like you said. It just shows the power of a proactive approach, you know, conducting a job search and establishing that network that way. I wanted to ask you, Nick, you're a person of faith, and part of this process, I know you're kind of praying for opportunities to emerge. What was that part of it like for you? Because I know that your job search took about 6 months, right?
Yeah, it took six long months.
Sure. So talk a little bit about kind of what that was like for you as a Christian trying to navigate this process.
Yeah, I think, you know, and at first I was pretty confident, you know, I have a shiny new degree, who couldn't find something to do out there. And so I was just saying, you know, God, help me find something, you know, where I can be myself and that sort of thing. So it was kind of a vague prayer. And then after I got going, kind of understanding process, it was a lot of prayers of, you know, help me understand who I am and why I'm here, why I'm looking for a job in the first place. You know, what am I called to do on this earth? it was more like self-exploration, I think, and just praying for a lot of patience that yeah. it wasn't just going to be, you know, sending out that job application and getting that response. And then now I have a job. It takes a lot of work and, you know, you have to be proactive about it. And so just being patient and letting these things grow into what it's supposed to.
Right. So part of the prayer is then kind of helping you cope with the reality of this taking a lot longer and there being some, you know, long stretches of not getting callbacks. So praying for that patience while you're working your tail off to try to get connected to folks who can kind of teach you about the world of work and help you understand a little more of where you fit in it. And then ultimately one of those connections leading to an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think just praying for that patience. Yeah, like you said.
So what advice would you have now, having gone through this, but then also working in a job where you are kind of on the other side of it, right? Hiring, maybe recruiting, and certainly onboarding folks. What advice would you have for job seekers?
I think that self-exploration is so critical. Just building that confidence in who you are was big for me, you know, looking into what my strengths are and just being able to communicate that authentically. I wanted people to see me for who I actually am in throughout that job process, whether it's, you know, a cover letter or in the actual interview. And so I think just not downplaying who you are. That's one of the things that really held me back, was not telling people and being proud of, you know, my strengths. It was more like, hey, I'm a cool guy. And, you know, these are some of the things that I'm all right at. You know, I'm nothing to write home about. But, you know, once I learned that that wasn't helping me at all, it wasn't serving me, I had to, you know, flip the script on that. But then being on the other side of it in human resources, those interviews where someone was not confident at all in kind of who they are or why they're even there in the first place was really challenging, because it kind of came off as this person, you know, they just applied for a random job. They don't really feel like they're a fit. So it was confusing why they were there in the first place. And so I kind of saw myself in that and made me realize that's not at all a productive approach.
Yeah, we talk about that a little bit in the book. There's a difference between modesty and humility, right? And people can probably hear this in, even in this interview, the type of person that you are. Maybe some of that is the Minnesota background and, you know, your family and all of that, but you're a very humble person, but also maybe a very modest person who really is loath to kind of make yourself out to be more than who you are. And, you know, just kind of like play the part and people will see it. You don't have to toot your own horn or whatever. But if you're a job seeker, then that kind of modesty really doesn't do you any favors, does it?
No, I think for me, it limited me. And yeah, I think I didn't want to come off as overconfident and arrogant. I think that that's just a trait that I struggle with. And so I kind of went the complete opposite way and said, well, I'm not going to come off as arrogant at all. And, you know, I want to make sure no one sees me as that. And in doing so, I didn't show that I was a unique person or that I was really even qualified for the job. I didn't jump into my strengths and I didn't come off as proud of who I am and that I could really serve the organization as a whole.
Yeah. And so that is kind of a key difference between modesty, in which a person is downplaying their abilities, versus humility, where a person is, you know, not exaggerating what they bring to the table, but not downplaying it either. You know, there's a sense in which humble people have an accurate appraisal of who they are, and that gives them a kind of quiet confidence where they can confidently present what they bring to the table, not in an exaggerated or cocky way, but in a confident way that doesn't downplay, you know, their strengths. And I think that is endearing. People find that endearing and they appreciate the confidence and they see the gifts and the skills that you have and they want to learn more. Whereas if you just constantly downplay and the pendulum swings too far from the arrogant side of things to the really modest side of things, then a person comes across as not having a lot to offer.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's so helpful to come in there and just be confident, and you don't have to be overbearing, but genuine in your strengths and that you're interviewing for a reason.
Right. Now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the work that you're doing now. You're with a company, Ascentus, that is an HR technology company. How would you describe the kind of work that you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. So currently what I'm doing now is I am what I like to refer to as kind of a translator between the client and the software development side. And so clients are working with me, kind of explaining their HR need and what they need this software to do. So, you know, it might be a current struggle or something that they're trying to grow into. And then it's my job to kind of take that and communicate that to the software development side and help them make that HR dream come true, I guess.
Okay. So you're really in kind of a solution focused role where you evaluate needs and then you work with your team to come up with ways to use the products that you have to meet the needs of these folks who are working in HR.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me now a little bit about what this looks like as a Christian. One of the things that we hammer home in redeeming work is this kind of idea of working redemptively, right? Thinking through the creation, fall, and redemption implications of all different kinds of work. And so comment a little bit on that. First of all, the creation side of things, where within your work right now do you see kind of God's creative design?
Yeah. I think with human resources, just as an industry, it's moving into kind of a main portion of a company. So back in the day, human resources was, you know, the people in the coat closet. But now everyone's realizing that the people are your only competitive advantage in terms of a company. And so you have to make sure to nourish, you know, the brilliant people that distinguish you from the company down the street. And so that's kind of where the need is that the human resources professionals are there to help all the people in every single company grow and develop and essentially pay benefit to the company as a whole.
Yeah, I love that. So if God's kind of endowed people with all these gifts and they have these opportunities to express those within their work, the HR function is really to support and nourish that, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's so many people with so many different skills that, you know, when they come into a company that you still have yet to grow and nourish and that they're still looking for their path. And so that's a lot of human resources is helping people, you know, blossom into the professionals that they are.
It's great. So then if we think about, you know, the effects of the fall, which we sometimes talk about having the effect of making things such that they're just not the way they're supposed to be. You know, a distortion of what things could be. Where do you see that? What kinds of things get in the way from, you know, this HR function being able to do what it is designed to do?
Yeah, for sure. I think that one of the sayings in human resources is that the people are the best part of your job and the people are also the most challenging. And just the way that humans are is that, you know, problems happen. Things are going to come up. People don't know how to handle. And so just being in human resources, your job is to be working with the people and nightmare situations come up and you have to be able to think on the fly and solve those issues and just make sure that you can get them back on track to being productive and happy people within the company.
Okay, so that's great. We've talked a little bit about God's creative design and as it applies to HR and the ways in which things have gone awry and are not the way they're supposed to be. How then do you work redemptively? Like, what are some ways that you kind of push against the ways in which that creative design has been distorted and are working to kind of move things back in the direction that maybe God intends for it?
Yeah, for sure. I would say in a couple of ways. So one, by providing human resources professionals with the time to actually work with the people. So there's so many administrative tasks that take those professionals away from working with the people. And so just finding solutions to provide them more time. And then I guess secondly, I would say providing them with the tools so that they can work with the people. So I think of that in a lot of like training and development software. So the talent management side of it, being able to set paths for people to grow so that they don't get stagnant and once people do get stagnant, that's when all those issues arise, when people don't feel like they're serving a purpose to the whole machine. And so just providing them the tools and also the time to be able to work and focus on the people.
I love that. So there's an efficiency function where administrative details that can occupy so much time go much faster because you have some software solutions to manage them quickly. But then also some of the tools that you provide for these folks actually helps guide their efforts in setting up goals for folks and helping nourish kind of the talent that they have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's really interesting because sometimes you hear some concerns about AI and automation and how, you know, as these technologies develop, it replaces people. What you're saying is that it actually allows HR professionals to do more of what they're best equipped to do by supporting them in that and then freeing up time for them to do that. It actually enables and facilitates their ability to kind of work like humans instead of doing the more robotic work themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that that's one of the experiences that I had is, you know, working with software that didn't serve that function. And so it was really cumbersome to do a lot of these administrative tasks. And you kind of look at it and think that was a lot of time that I could have spent developing one of these team members to, you know, move into another position or help them grow in some sort of way. So, yeah.
That's awesome. How is this work allowing you to use your gifts?
I think that I'm a very patient person and I love being the patient person for when people need it and when they're struggling with some sort of concept or they need someone to problem solve and they don't have the luxury of that time or the patience. That's where I love to step in and be able to find that solution, find that, you know, be there for them in their time of distress.
Right. Nick, you seem like someone who is just, you have the temperament and just this knack for providing that kind of support for people who are stressed and who need that kind of calm, steadying voice. And it's inspiring for me to see someone who is just in a role for which they are so uniquely suited.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I think, you know, starting out on my job conquest, if I could have seen a snapshot of where I am now, it would have probably knocked my socks off.
That is amazing. Where do you see yourself in the future?
You know, that's a good question. But, you know, now that I've been in kind of the software realm for a little bit, I guess 5 weeks now, but I love it. I love the techie side of it. And I love the problem solving and that there's always something new on the horizon. So definitely see myself in some sort of technology focused company, but, you know, a company that has a strong culture for the people and that they always try and put the people first is also something that really aligns with who I am and being able to develop everyone.
That's fantastic. Nick, I really, really appreciate your sharing yourself with our listeners on this podcast. Thanks for taking the time and thanks for being such a great example of expressing your gifts in ways that make the world better can look like.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate it.
All right. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. For more information about my new book, Redeeming Work, go to redeemingworkbook.com or search Redeeming Work at Google Books, Goodreads, or Amazon, or go to the publisher's website at templetonpress.com. Please review it at any of those sites. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U. To learn more about Pathway U, go to pathwayu.com. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, Pathway U is offering a 20% off coupon code. When you check out, simply enter the code PURPOSEPOD. I'm your host, Brian Dick, and we'll see you next time.